Essentially, what is a motive? What are the characteristics that define a mullet and that differentiate a mullet from other assignments? Differentiate a mullet from other assignments. And our system, now this, we study not only Tzitzis, but we study Rishis too. So, it's important to know and to understand precisely what evil is, what Rishis is, because we maintain that in order to know what the good is, a person must also know what evil is. And it's a principle of Plato, but it's a principle of Yadis as well. So what I want to do is spend a little time in uncovering the Megillah, and I think that if we do it properly, we'll be able to come up with an understanding of what exactly a mullet is, and what differentiates a mullet from other Yeshayim, other evil people. In other words, what's the difference, for instance, between Haman and Paro? Okay, Paro was a Russia, but Paro was not a mullet. So apparently the Torah differentiates between the two. There must be a difference. What is the difference between these two individuals, between these two people? Okay. And what they exemplify. There's a few questions I would ask on the start for a few questions on the Megillah. Okay. You know, the essence of the Megillah really opens up in the last part, the Chazal, that opens up the whole Megillah, is on the pasuk of Moro Kocha Amoy Vialeha, which I spoke about before. That Chazal say, Rashi explains, that it's Gemara Megillah. That Umoro al Kocha. So Rashi says it's in Esther 9, 26. Teshuva. Yeah. Moro al Kocha Moi Vialeha. It says, Mara Hashverosh and Ishtamish Bekoya Kodesh. What did Hashverosh see that it used the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash? And more Gialehem. So, Bosutton Rokha Benin Vargas Vashti. Sutton came and caused him to kill Vashti. So, we explain this. That it's interesting that he used the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash. And that's a premise in Yadis. A premise in Yadis is that the Rishoyim really recognize Torah on some unconscious level. And that's why Ahasuerus really used the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, because he wanted to demonstrate to himself and to others that there's no such thing as the ideals of Torah. So these holy Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash can be used by myself for my own personal pleasure, my own enjoyment, which is really Me'ila Bagdish. That's the idea of Mo'el Bagdish, means used for my own personal enjoyment, and nothing's going to happen to me. So it's a victory in the Russia's mind over the idealism of the Torah. That's what it is. And I brought a raya, I wrote a proof for this from the fact that the Arch of Titus in Rome, what does it show? It shows the Jews carrying the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. The Jews, the slaves carrying the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I thought. Anyway. Richard? Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. Anyway, so it shows you that the Russia recognizes the Beis HaMikdash. Titus the Russia recognizes the Beis HaMikdash. And the Arch of Triumph, what is the triumph really? The triumph is over the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. Every Russia recognizes that. So, that is so. And that's so with regard to Ahasuerus. But then the question is, so what's the difference really between Ahasuerus and Haman? Haman also was a person that... every Russia recognizes a Molek is an individual that essentially recognizes Yadus in a distorted way. He has some kind of distorted recognition. And the Rishay Olam, on some unconscious level, recognize Torah and attempt to prove that it's false and that they could be victorious over it. Ahasuerus also does this. But there's a difference, and somehow there's a difference between Achashverosh and between Haman. Achashverosh was a Rasha and Haman was a Rasha. There's a difference between the two of them. What precisely is the difference? Okay. Yeah. So we explained that the more idea Aleihem was that it showed it was a Musar Haskel that showed that what happens to an individual like Achashverosh, who is a total hedonist, and he wants that his hedonistic tendencies should be victorious over the idealism of Torah. So what happened was that such a philosophy knows no limit. So then he wanted to use Vashti for his own personal, his own egoistic and sensual satisfactions. But she didn't want to go along with it. So that's why he had to kill her. So basically what it showed was that the life of the hedonist is one in which if a person is involved in that kind of way of life, it's endless basically. There's no restrictions. Until a person reaches a point where he oversteps his bound, and then he meets destruction. Okay, which was personal destruction for him when Vashti was killed. Okay. Now, let's take a look at... Haman, of course, Haman was something different. Haman was a problem, was an egoistic problem. A problem with his ego. So, Maro Haman Shinskani Ben Mordechai. No idea, Elof Shetolos, or Esbon of Alex. So, it means that by Haman had it would seem everything. But one individual, he couldn't tolerate. Couldn't tolerate the Mordechai. One person, the whole thing to Shovelis, one individual he couldn't tolerate, and because of that, he destroyed himself. Because of one person, he destroyed himself. It's interesting, by the way, that there's no limit to the egomania, and this egotistical individual was eventually had to cause his own destruction. But it's interesting with regard to that, because there are two places. It says like this. It says that. It's an Esther Gimel. It's an Esther Gimel. If you want me to follow along, it's up to you. It's an Esther Gimel. After these things, Achashverosh raised the position of Haman, and he placed his position above that of all the other officers. And then it says,
his position above that of all the other officers. And then it says, So he wouldn't go there. So that was then it says that they brought this news to they asked Mordechai every day my daughter told her as mitzvah of Melech. Why do you violate the king's dictates, his law, his rule? So it says they kept telling him every day, and then they brought the news to Haman to see Liros Hayam the Divrei Mordechai. He didn't let me show you. Okay. Like to understand why he said the Gemara says. The Gemara says, why didn't Mordechai really bow down to Haman? And the Gemara says, can't you know ya? Was he a rebellious guy? You want to do it? So the Gemara says, so Chazal say that there are two Chazal. One Chazal say that because there was something, some Avodah Zarah in his chest, and the other Chazal say that he himself was Avodah Zarah. We'll see, these are both basically the same idea. But it says that, so Haman saw that Mordechai is not Korei Meshtachal Alo, so this is why you mull Haman Chema. So then he became very angry. And then, Vayivas Beinah of Lishloch Yad Mordechai Avado, Kigidu Asa Mordechai, so he made a decree against all the Jews, because he saw it wasn't just Mordechai, but it was a whole nation like that. It's interesting, later again, he got upset again, because it says, after he was invited to the Suda of Esther, so he was very excited, and then it says that he, when he saw, I ate somebody almost half a tov lei, he was very happy that day. And then when he saw Mordechai, So again, it says, "Aymolei Haman Amorchai Chema." Okay. So then he came home and he said, "Kol Zayin Shovali." And then they suggested, Zeresh Ishto and Kolov suggested they should make an Eitzen and they should hang Mordechai up immediately, tomorrow. Don't wait for the decree. What caused him to get so upset? I mean, he knew before that Mordechai is not there in the Shabbat. What was the second time that he got him so, so wild that he had to immediately make this suggestion to the king? Okay. Then, so basically, that's the second. So, how many questions do we have? Yeah. What was first question? I guess first question is, what is the Avodah Zarah of Haman? That's first question. What was this Avodah Zarah? What kind of what was the concept of Haman having an Avodah Zarah? Sounds funny, wouldn't it? The Avodah Zarah on his chest. He was the Avodah Zarah. What does it mean? What does Chazal mean when they say that? I mean, it's not just Chazal. It's a question of why Mordechai wasn't Korea Mishtachalah. It doesn't seem to me that in Hilchas Avodah Zarah that there would be a violation if a person would bow down to such a thing. I mean, he's not bowing down to the idol, bowing down to the person. You say, Agav Orche is bowing down. I mean, it doesn't seem like what Chazal is saying would satisfy the requirements of Hilchas Avodah Zarah. Hilchas Avodah Zarah, you must have an Avodah Zarah that they worship, and you must bow down to that Avodah Zarah. Over here, they weren't bowing down to the Avodah Zarah, bowing down to Haman. If you say, what?
So, of course, that wouldn't bother him.
Yeah.
If he wasn't bowing down to the Avodah Zarah, it wouldn't bother him.
Well, but the point is, okay, but whatever it is, you know, the Hilchas Avodah Zarah must be Derech Avodah. It has to be. This is not an Avodah. This is not. He happens to have an Avodah on his chest. So what? But he's not bound down to the Avodah Zarah. People are bound down to him. It's not the Derech Avodah. So he's not doing it. He's not doing it to the Avodah Zarah itself. It's a funny Chazal. It sounds like Chazal are putting something in there that they're trying to make it into Avodah Zarah, but it really isn't. Okay, I'd like to understand that. Second thing is the question of Lokongalos on men. What was different the second time from the first time? He was ready before that. Mordechai was my grandma and Mishavah. What excited him the second time? Yeah. There's an interesting medrash. The medrash says, when it says, Vayosa Melech Estapato Me'al Yodom, Vayitno, Lahoman. So the medrash says that, that also he made the suggestion. When he made the suggestion about destroying the Jews. So it says that, it says, Vayosa Melch Tavat Mal Yoda, that's in Gimel Yud. Vayitna Lohamma Menadosa Doga Tzarihina. So the Medrash says that, Medrash Rabba, Rabbonan Amri, Achashverosh Soni Yisrael Yosem Yohamman Arash. Maybe says Achashverosh hated the Jews more than Haman Arash. Why? This says, Minhodo Shalom, Lakech Nosein Erovam, Lamocha. If a person wants to purchase something, so what he does is he gives, in order to assure the seller of his credit, so he gives him something, an Erovam. Over it's the commerce, that the Melech is giving him an Erovam. He should be giving the Melech. So the Medrash says, whatever the limit is, not interesting to him, but the Medrash says that Achashverosh hated the Jews was a greater Sony Israel than Haman. Sounds preposterous. Because in fact we see Achashverosh was good to the Jews later. He's good to the Jews later. I can say he hates the Jews more than Haman. Doesn't it's not all of that. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Then, of course, the question we raised before, what's the difference between Achashverosh and Mishtamish with the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash is also certainly the same type of rishis. Same type of hatred, a sinah for Yadus, which is based on it's a sinah for the ideology of Yadus. What does it mean? What does it mean, Mishtamish with the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash? So you tell me that Achashverosh was simply a hedonist. But he wasn't just a hedonist. Because you see that he had a sinner for the ideology of Yadus. Because he was mishtamish with the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's just like Haman also. What's the difference? It's interesting because Chazal say that when Haman wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael, so what does it say? It says over there, Ki Gidlo Es Am Mordechai. Ki Gidlo Es Am Mordechai. So, so Chazal say, who is Am Mordechai? Chazal say, it's Rabban. Rabban. It means the Chachamim. So what does it mean, the Chachamim? Because it means the hatred is an ideological hatred. That's what it means. So the hatred always is directed against the Torah itself. That's why you see that striker, Yimach Shemar, the starring for the striker, yeah, the starring for the Nazis. You take a look in his book, and the what does he show? He shows the rabbi teaching Talmud, whatever shachas that is, that the hatred is always against the Chacham. Always. Sin as Yisrael is always against the Chacham. Yeah. Okay. Another question I would ask, and that is that the so another question is, if the Balal would never shnas and alchay, this question you might not agree with me on. That is, that it said in the Megillah, so the probably one of the most well-known parts of the Megillah is where Haman comes to Ahasuerus at night time and he makes a suggestion that he makes it miyachpots are not losses prayers with many. So he makes these, he thinks Ahasuerus was asked what you do for a person that's loyal to the king. So he thought it's for himself, so he says, well, me, Yachbots, Melech Lasser, Shikar Yosef, Imani. He thought that he means him. So he made a very lavish suggestion. He extended himself. And he said that, okay, so he wanted to even give him the Keser Malchus. Of course, later he says like this. Yerashi mentions later he says like this. The Nasan, he saw that Ahasuerus wasn't too happy about the Keser part, so he took that back. So it went too far. But then Ahasuerus told Haman, he says to Haman, my kachs of wishes for the suska shed di barto, vasechin le Mordechai ha Yehudi, ha Yoshe v'shar ha Melech, al tapel governor kol shed di barto. Okay. So, it would seem, at this point, that the fact that he mentioned, he says, vasechin le Mordechai ha Yehudi, that it was he was really trying to hurt him. He knew very well. He knew who Mordechai was. Mordechai and Haman were very prominent people in the Malchus. The most prominent people in the Malchus. As a matter of fact, Chazal say, when he made the Suda, Lasos Kirtzon Ish Vo Ish. So what did Chazal say? Ish Vo Ish? Who are these two people, Ish Vo Ish? Mordechai and Haman. They're the most prominent people. No reason to say Mordechai Yehudi. So obviously Ahasuerus was trying to hurt Haman by that statement. But then later, of course, he did it. He went and did it. And then he came home. And he was, it says, Haman nidchaf al beso ovo v'chafui rosh. All right, he was completely distraught, mortified. So it says, then they told him, they said, in Mizera Yehuda Mordechai shechelos lim polafonav l'suchalo, ki nafol ti polafonav. Okay, so the same ones that in the previous parak said that just told him Yasuwaits Gavoa Hamishim Amo, he just told him before Yasuwaits. What's the matter? Now, what Amo said over here that in Mizera, who the Mordechai Shechelos, the Polophon, was Sukhalok, enough of the Polophon, what happened so quickly? So he explained that the idea is that the Megillah lets you an interesting insight into anti-Semitism. At first they said that make an Eitz Gavoa Hamishim Amo and hang Mordechai. Then, when they saw that he wasn't successful. They saw the beginning of his downfall, so they said, no, no, no. Now you're going to, now if he's a Jew, if he's from Zarayudim, then not all people are fun of. You're going to fall completely. What happened a short while before? They didn't know he was from Zarayudim. They didn't know he was Jewish. I mean, what was the sudden change? So we said last time that what the Medrash shows is that behind the anti-Semitism is an unbelievable fear. There's a tremendous fear of the Jew. And you see this in the fact that the anti-Semites always say the Jews are involved in a universal conspiracy, and that the Jew is like this picture as a person who is like a devil, has long tentacles all over the earth, and certain sinister powers are attributed to him. Mystical sinister powers are attributed to the Jew. What does that show? That shows you an unbelievable, unconscious fear of the Jew. And that's why when the Jew is down, is downtrodden, that fear is gone. That alleviates the fear. But the moment he starts to rise, then the fear takes over, and then the Rishayim are lost. It becomes like by Yeshua ben Nun, what Rachav Azona said. And people, they didn't have any koch to even speak. I forget the Russian of the pasuk over there, the way she describes it. The fear of the Jew. Behind the anti-Semitism is an unbelievable fear. And that's what's expressed over there. At first when the Jews were down, so then she said destroyed. But the moment they see the Jews starting to rise, then the fear comes out. So that's in Mizrahi. But I'd like to understand what the downfall was. What was the downfall? So what? I mean, so you tell me, of course, it was a terrible thing. Here, Haman hated Mordechai, and now he has to go, and he has to give him covered Malchus. Yeah, I understand that personally. That was a tremendous blow to him. But why does it signify the beginning of a downfall, of a total downfall? Because basically, at that point, what did you have? The edict of the king was intact, which means to say that the Jews were going to be destroyed in several months' time. So what happened? So now Ahasuerus happened to feel that he must show some debt of gratitude to Mordechai. So he used Haman. So why is that the beginning of the downfall? So you tell me on an emotional level was the biggest downfall. Yeah, it's true on an emotional level. But Haman wasn't just a regular emotional person. It'd be wrong if you just assessed him as a completely emotional individual. He was an individual that had complete control over himself, in his life. He was able to. He was a very intelligent person. He was able to bring about something which was preposterous because of his abilities of leadership. And he was a strong person. He was a politically minded individual, very intelligent, politically minded individual. So what if Ahasuerus wants to honor one Jew? So what? You're going to destroy all the Jews soon and get him later? Things change, you know. Ahasuerus, she changes one day like this, one day like that. So, why was this the beginning of the downfall? That's what I want to understand. To me, it seems to ask me something more here than just the fact that emotionally he hated Mordechai. Okay, something more, because here they saw that right now is the beginning of the end. Why was it the beginning of the end at that point? Okay. One more question I want to ask. The question is really, and this is something that has to be clarified, and that is that when Esther finally, of course, Esther used her unbelievable ingenuity, and she used the psychological principle in order to ensnare Haman. And that was that she made two mishters. The first mishter, she didn't tell Ahasuerus what she had on her mind. So therefore, and she just was Haman, something with Haman, he didn't know what it was. But because of that, Balailahu, Nogadoshnas Amalach, he started to fantasize. So she knew that the imagination is more powerful than reality. She knew that if she just came over to Ahasuerus, she just told him exactly what she thought, it would never have the effect of allowing his mind to start imagining things about Haman. So apparently it's clear that something was going on already before. In order for Ahasuerus to start thinking, the Medrash says he had a dream, he saw Haman at his throat with a knife, and he thought that Haman's taking off with Esther. He said, what's going on? Something is going on. Esther Amalka knew that with a deep insight into psychology, she knew that it's much more potent to use the imagination. Imagination is a much more powerful tool than reality. So she let him imagine. And that's why it was Noda Darshnasa Malach, and he started to think about various different things. But then in the second Mishnah, he was primed. So Balayla Hu Noda Darshnasa Malach really primed him for the second Mishnah. And what happened in the second Mishnah? And the second Mishnah was where Esther revealed exactly what it was, and then Haman was caught, and he was, in the eyes of the king, he was considered the most evil individual, and his fate was sealed. Okay. His fate was sealed. But the Megillah doesn't tell us why exactly his fate was sealed. It's interesting. What exactly was his crime? The crime that Haman supposedly committed is not really stated in the Megillah. So why did Ahasuerus actually, what did he think that when he wanted to kill Haman, that Haman wanted to do? What was the terrible crime that he was supposed to be executed for? Okay. That's missing in the Megillah. That's missing in the Megillah. Yes. You know the way to explain it. That a gam lechbosh is a malchi imi bayis means that he wants to take over the malchus, because that's the sign of taking over the malchus, is capturing the queen. There's no question about that. But what was the indication? What indicated that? That sealed his fate. A gam lechbosh is a malchi imi bayis. He made one subtle mistake over there. He made a mistake that he was completely overcome, and he jumped on the bed with Esther. That was bad. Showed to his Ahasuerus' mind that there's something, he overwent the bounds of a queen. You don't do that to a queen. But he was so at that point, he was emotionally so far gone that he forgot about propriety. But Ahasuerus was still in the real world. When he took a look at this, to him, this was an impossible action. So that sealed his fate forever. Okay. So that was basically the second time that Haman really made a subtle error. First time was with the Kesar Malchus. He went too far, Kesar Malchus, which Ahasuerus probably didn't forget. And the second time was with the queen when he fell on the bed with the queen. That was the second time. That was the final one. Yeah. Okay, but what a wonder. Wasn't just an economical blunder. Marx maintains that everything goes by, that history goes by economics. We hold it goes by a different force. The ego is a much more powerful force. Yes.
You never heard of between Ahasuerus and Esther, or something which was really like in Malchus or dealing in his own personal satisfaction. That's when it really developed. Like initially when telling what the kill you say, he sat down and drank after he gave him the drink.
Well, that didn't do him any good, but that was still one of the factors. A person's fate is sealed emotionally by another individual, never by one factor, but by many. But there has to be one predominant idea that causes disruption. There are other accessory ideas. Yes. The psuk, where it says the question of what was the Avodah Zarah? That was the original question. What was the Avodah Zarah? Why was Haman considered such an Avodah Zarah? Alright? Yeah. You see, it says in the Pasuk, it says that um, What's strange about this pasuk? Vayom avdei melech asher b'sher. He says, "Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachar." Yeah, he didn't kneel, he didn't bow. Vayom avdei melech asher b'sher melech lo Mordechai. Madu atol veris mitzvah sa melech. Ask him a question. Found an answer. Vayikam amelav yom vayom. Every day they would tell him. Lo shama alayhem. He didn't listen to them. Vayagidu lo Haman. They told Haman liros to see hayam du divrei Mordechai. He higit lohem ashehu yehudi. So what has to be explained in this pasuk? Divrei Mordechai? It says hayam du divrei. It's not divrei Mordechai. Didn't say anything. You see, he didn't say it. And ki higit lohem ashehu yehudi. So what's got to do with being a yehudi? So what? What's got to do with this was before any kind of a decree. Nothing happened yet. So what was the fact that he was a yehudi?
Okay.
So what I want to say is like this, that in the sin of Amalek, there is a quality that's not to be found in any other kind of sin. You see, in the sin of Amalek, there's something unusual there. The Torah singles out Machias Amalek, Ki Yod Al Keis Kor, Nosom Alot Hashem Ba Amalek Dor Midor Dor. So it means, and somebody asked me a question, Rose asked a question, says, what does it say that in Akash Baruch Hu says, Ki Machal Emcha Zech Amalek, but the question is not Akash Baruch Hu's Mach, it's Klal Yisrael was Mach. But it means to say, Ki Machal Emcha Zech Amalek, it means to say that the knowledge of Akash Baruch Hu, insofar as humanly possible, demands that a person destroys Amalek. It's because of the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Amalek is destroyed. Machal Emcha means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroys Amalek not just through the Ashgacha, of course, the Ashgacha Klal Yisrael, but it means that essentially, Ki Machal Emcha Zecha Amalek means any HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the cause of the destruction of Amalek, because attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu means by definition that you have to hate Amalek and destroy Amalek. So what is this quality? What is this quality in Amalek? A special quality in Amalek. What I want to say is that the quality in Amalek is that Amalek is not just a hatred, but Amalek is an ideology. Amalek is an ideology. It's different than any other sin. See, there are people that hate the Jews, but they hate the Jews on an emotional plane. It's an emotional form. That's a Russian. It's an evil person. Para, evil person. But the Amalek is different. The Amalek is a person that represents what the world would call high standards. High standards. It's a person that endorses qualities such as courage, commitment, ideology, selflessness. It's a whole philosophy and a system and a way of life. Amalek. Amalek is not just base hatred. Not just base hatred. You see, when Haman set himself up, that's what Chazal mean when they say it was Nevada Zara. What does it mean? It wasn't Hilchas Nevada Zara. It wasn't Hilchas Nevada Zara. It means to say that Haman was setting himself up. The cover that Haman was getting was because of the fact that he was setting himself up as the leader of an ideological movement. It was his ideology, his way of life. And the cover that he was getting was not just for Haman as a person, but for Haman insofar as his ideology is concerned. That's why Mordechai could not be Korea Mishtachara. That's what the pasuk. Pasuk is like, "Madua vayhi kama lav yom vayom voshlom alehem vayagidu lohem liros hayam di divrei Mordechai ki higid lohem ashehu yehudi." Because when they asked Mordechai, "Why don't you bow down?" So, like Chazal say, Mordechai wasn't a kantron. He wasn't a kantron. He wasn't just rebellious. But he explained to them that you're not bowing down to the person of Haman. That's a respected official by the king. You're bowing down to an ideology. And I'm a Jew, and I can't bow down, I can't respect that ideology. That's key. He didn't know how much I knew. Okay. It's interesting. There's a Taisvis that says a similar kind of a concept in Ksubas. As the Gemara says in Ksubas, Umole no duo, ilmole no duo lachananya misho vazaya av a polchu vitzalma. Gemara says in Ksubas, daf lama gimma abeis. Gemara says, if they would have tortured Hananya misho vazaya, so they would have bowed down to the tzalma. So Taisvis says, Akasha, Taisvis says, I don't understand, he says. Tema, he says. How could the Gemara say such a thing? Because you see, Rabbi Akiva said, all my life I was mitzvah in this pasuk. When can I fulfill this pasuk? When they tortured, he says, mashma da b'chol nafshecho, is even if they torture a person, rachmal etzlan, the isur and kashin, just like Rabbi Akiva, that they rape the skin with the combs of the steel. He says, combs of iron. B'chol shkein lin negudi. Certainly, if they just give him malchus, they physically torture him. Negudi means they just whip him. So then certainly he shouldn't give in. So I'm Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, the Oso Tzelem lo hoya avodas kachotim mamash. It wasn't a real idol that they didn't bow, that they refused to bow down to. He says, Elo hoya osu l'chvod ha-melech. It was made for the honor of the king. What does it mean? It means it represented a certain way of life of the king. It was a kind of philosophy and ideology. You see? So he says, V'afal pikein hayabo kiddush Hashem. He says, even though halachically it wasn't avodah zarah, but was a kiddush Hashem that they refrained from bowing down because of the fact that it represented a certain way of life, this idol. See, the Rambam says a tzelem, well, why is the, what is the word tzelem? The word tzelem, why do they call it avodah zarah tzelem? And we say, b'tzelem elokim. So it sounds like the word tzelem is being used in two different ways. But the Rambam explains very easily, because Tzelem means something that has an idea behind it. So when the people worship the Avodah Zarah, it represents a certain, there's an idea behind the Avodah Zarah. It's only a fool that worships the actual thing that's made out of sticks and stones. But people who endorse the Avodah Zarah, the leaders of the Avodah Zarah, they use it to reflect a certain idea. A corrupt idea, but it's an idea. It's an idea behind it. So actually, that's what it means over here. It means that Tzelem that he set up, that Nebuchadnezzar set up, was really to reflect a certain idea. It wasn't true Avodah Zarah. It was paying homage to a certain Derech HaChayim. And Hananya Mishor Vazaya refused to do it, even though halachically it wasn't Avodah Zarah, but philosophically it was Avodah Zarah, so it was a Kiddush Hashem, so they refused. And that's the exact same thing that Mordechai did in Shushan HaBira. When he refused, Madua Ta'over is mitzvah samelech. So it says, Vayihi Kamalok Yom Vayom, Liras Hayam do I get along with Liras Hayam do Divre Mordechai, Jihi Gidlohem Mashahu Yehudi. So then he said, I'm a Jew and I can't endorse. You're not just bowing down to me, you're bowing down to a Derech HaChaim. I have a different Derech HaChaim. It goes against my Derech HaChaim, and I refuse to acknowledge this Derech HaChaim. That's why Mordechai was not Koreo Mishtachavet. Okay? That's why it follows. It says, Vayivis Bein of Lashloch Yod Mordechai Levado, Kigidlos Am Mordechai. What does Am Mordechai mean? The Chachonim, the Chachmei Yisrael. Because he saw right away where the trouble starts from. It starts from the philosophy and the ideology of Yadus. So because of that, he was filled with a hate, an immense hatred for the ideology, which is completely opposite of his ideology, you see, and that's why Bikesh LaHashmid is called Yehudim Shavu Cholmachos Achshvar Jamar. That's why that was the source. That was the root of his anti-Semitism, which is the root of the anti-Semitism of Amalek. Amalek can't tolerate the ideology of Yadus, and it especially can't tolerate seeing this ideology exist in a nation. Socially, in a social setting, that there's a nation that reflects God's ideology. That's what they can't tolerate. And that's why they always must, in their mind, they must wipe out that nation. Okay?
What is that?
The greatness of man, but not universal man. It's not on a universal level, but it's on a particularized level. In other words, you had the door, you had Dora Haflug. Dora Flug also believed in the greatness of man. the tower, the archaeology, the whole, the godless Adam, and you don't need a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That was a denial of God. But that was on a universal level for all of man. But Amalek is looking for social superiority of its own nation. And it's looking to engage itself in the aim of Amalek and the objective of Amalek is really to constantly gain pleasure out of reflecting upon their own superiority as a nation. That's the ideology of Amalek. Amalek is looking for the enjoyment of involving oneself in an appreciation, the enjoyment of appreciating their own grandeur. That's what Amalek is, which is exactly the opposite of Yadus, which Yadus maintains that a person's highest level is when he recognizes how small he is. When he recognizes how absolutely, infinitesimally small he is. Exactly the opposite ideology. And Haman reflected the ideology of Amalek, and that's why Mordechai could not be a Kareel Mishachar. Yes?
Yes, since you said Amalek hatred and ideological hatred,
the difference between a Moloch and between a Russia, Stama Russia, of course, the question is, we raised before, but Achashverosh also hated the ideology of Yadus, because you see from the Kelim and the Beis HaMikdash, he hated them too. As a matter of fact, it says his hatred to the Jews was greater than Haman's, we mentioned before, the Chazal. So what's the answer? The answer is, there's a difference. The difference is that in Haman, the hatred of the Jew becomes a part of his whole philosophy. It becomes a system, systematized logically with universals, and it becomes a whole philosophy and a whole system of thinking. That's why you could see it very simply by Hitler, Yamashima, the Nazis. There was Goebbels, was the philosopher, Stryker the historian, and the hatred of the Jew wasn't simply a hatred. But it became a whole, a whole type of theoretical. It was on a theoretical plane to say the Jew is evil because he comes from a certain type of a certain source, a different source than other people. He's naturally evil. The whole system with their history and their all their ideas. I mean, you know very well. The philosophy, it's genetics, the whole racial, the whole system. It becomes, they work on it, and it becomes a whole theoretical belief system. It's a theoretical belief system. That characterizes Amalek. The Russia never reaches that level. See, Achashverosh hated the Beis HaMikdash, the Kelim. He didn't want to be restricted because he was a hedonist. But he didn't go any further. That's it. You see, it's a hatred towards the Jew. But when the hatred towards the Jew, when the mind, in other words, in one word, Amalek is a person who, or people, who are involved with their mind, you see, with the Koach HaMachshava, to create a false and distorted system against the Jew. That's Amalek. That's why Amalek is really evil. Why? Because when can man really be evil? Only when he functions truly as man on the highest level. And what element is the highest element in man? His mind. Amalek is where the mind is used to create a whole philosophy against Torah, a whole systematic philosophy against Torah. Distorted. The evil is evil in machshava and thought. That's what Amalek is. Another Russia never reaches that level. Achashverosh sure hated the Jews. As a matter of fact, that's what the matter says. He hated the Jews worse than Haman. So how is it possible if he hated the Jews worse than Haman that he wasn't so bad after all? What's the answer? The answer is it never reached the ideological plane. It was just an emotion. Yes, his emotion was greater. He even hated them at that point. His emotional hatred was greater than Haman's. An emotional hatred. But in Haman it wasn't just an emotional hatred. In Haman it was a thought-out system, a philosophical system, a thought-out system. That is the character, that's the unique quality of Amalek. Amalek is evil, but not just evil. but evil is the mind. That's why, you see, yes.
Why is the philosophy of the Molech based
on it? There's a lot to show that it was just haphazard. Things just work haphazardly, and man is the one that controls everything. He's the one that's in control. He's the one that should be deified. It's the deification of man, but not universal man. Universal man is that dark level. It's particular man, a particular group of people that are intent on having themselves deified. That was Haman. That's what Haman represents.
It's akin to the way the Rambam explains, you know, hero is worse than Meister because...
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Because you're using a higher element. It's the highest element of man being used for a totally evil plot, a distorted view of reality, creating a distorted philosophy. That's the essence of Amalek. That's why by Amalek, yes. And Mordechai, really, why did he do that to Shara Malach? Because he was hoping that there would be others that would join him. No doubt about it. Because that's what he told them. He explained to them that this isn't Haman that you're respecting. You're respecting an ideology. But that ideology is false. That's a distorted, corrupt ideology. So what he was hoping, offhand, it would seem, was that others should join him. But no, they kept on saying, "I'm a little yom yom, a little show my way." And he didn't get any followers, didn't get any supporters. So then they finally reported him to Haman to see what happened. Yamdu divrei Mordechai, because they saw he is taking a certain position. His position. Let's see which position is going to prevail. See, it was a philosophy. It was one position against another position. That's what happened. Okay, but he wanted. He was protesting. He was a courageous person. He wouldn't just let it go. He wouldn't just go high. He was hoping that he could overthrow him. He could do something against him to stop him. Mordechai, because they saw he is taking a certain position. His position. Let's see which position is going to prevail. See? It was a philosophy. It was one position against another position. That's what happened. Okay? But he wanted, he was protesting. He was a courageous person. He wouldn't just let it go. He wouldn't just go high. He was hoping that he could overthrow him. He could do something against him to stop him.
But based on your definition of Amalek,
comes an ideology. What does it mean, an ideology? It means to say, you see, like Hitler, Yimach Shemo, that even though the Nazis were losing the war, but still, and they're taking away from their war effort, in order to destroy people, to destroy Jews, that won't stop them. Why? Because it's an ideology. That's the whole system and a commitment. A commitment. I mean, the Amalek has... you see, you have to understand, why was Hitler successful? Why was Hitler so successful? How could a person with such riches, the world looks back now and askance, how is it possible? They themselves, the German Rishonim today, themselves look back and they can't imagine. Well, what happened to them? What's the answer? The answer is because Hitler was successful because... He was standing on the platform. He was presenting a platform of an ideal. You see, you can't reach people with just hatred. Hatred. You can have a few minority groups that have a hatred towards a Jew. That's a low level. But to reach people, you have to have Hitler was a person that was not a materialistic person, an idealistic person. He wouldn't eat anything more than his troops ate on the field. He was self-sacrificing. He was committed. He was a person that reflected the ideals of commitment, devotion, selflessness. You see, an ideal, it represented an ideal. The only person that can really do evil is a person that represents ideals to human beings. A person that's just on the lower level, just hatred, stop hatred. Yeah, he's evil. But he can never have an effect. In order to have an effect on people, to really accomplish riches, you must work and appear to have the virtues that every society recognizes. Courage, all the virtues. You look back and you read this, you'll see he was a person, and Nazis were people, and Yimach Shimon, that they invoked the ideals of humanity. Courage, selflessness, commitment, all the qualities that people look up to were actually taken and made as part of the system. That's why he was successful. That's how a Moloch is successful. See, that's the difference in a Moloch and between a Russian. The difference in a Moloch and between Paro. Paro enslaved the Jews. He hated them and he enslaved them. But that was a hatred of the Russian. But to destroy them, you see, go out of your way to destroy them, where it costs money. It costs money to destroy people. What did Paro say? It costs money to destroy people. So to make it into an ideal and a philosophy and a way of life and something that demands commitment to. It uses all the virtues that people respect are being used in such a type of a system. That is a Moloch. That is Rishus. That's Lasos Kirtzon Ish Va'ish by the Mishter. So what does Chazal say? Who are those two Ish? Who are those two Ishim? Who are those two people? Mordechai and Haman. That means that way back in the beginning of the Mishter, the first Mishter of Achashverosh, Achashverosh already saw that he has two people that reflect, that in his mind reflected ideals. They were Mordechai and Haman. He didn't know the difference between the two, but he saw these are just not stomp people. Mordechai is not a stomp person. Something else is moving him. And Haman's not stomp a person. To him, they appeal to be the same, because they reflected in his mind certain virtues. A Moloch really represents himself as a noble individual. He's a noble person. Respectable, a respectable individual. Meekness is not respectable. A Moloch is respectable, you see. He uses those qualities. That's the mark of a Moloch. Wherever you see an ideology, you should know that's a Moloch. That's why PLO is an ideology. It is a Moloch. It's a Moloch. And the more clever the person is, the more dangerous he is, of course, and the more of a Moloch he is. And you see a Buchanan, the way he tries to disguise his hatred towards the Jew with arguments that are good arguments. That's a man that's thinking in ideological terms. He is a very dangerous individual. That's a Moloch. That reflects on Moloch. Listen carefully, you see. As a matter of fact, Buchanan, if you listen carefully, reflects Hitler. Same type of... I'm sure he studied it. There's no question about it. There's a lot of statements he makes. It's very similar. Yes? He lost the Torah of Bechila. So why wouldn't I say that Paro is a worse Russian than Haman? I would say that that Haman is a worse Russian, and Moloch is worse. But the reason why Paro lost his Bechira was because of the situation. See, the Rambam says that his loss of Bechira was as if God took away a faculty of... God takes away a faculty of a certain person. Like takes away his eyesight or his ability to hear or whatever. Faculty. But the only reason why was because... why God intervened in that manner and took away that faculty was because he reached a certain level of rishus, which Haman also reached, but there was no reason to do it. Haman's Bechira, it's interesting. Haman's Bechira was intervened with. Where? Because it says when he came home after the downfall, it says... And then they told him, what happened if it says, Oda Medabrim Imo? This is what we say in another video. Wasn't it Oda Medabrim Imo? See, Haman was a very clever person. So at that point, when he saw he's going to lose, he could have changed his whole policy, a new policy, and he might have been able to save himself. And he gave him a chance. Oda Medabrim Imo, Sarisa Melchigil. And they pulled him away. So he didn't get a chance to change his approach. He didn't give him a chance. They took away the thing with his ability to change things. But anyway, yes. Anti-Semitism. They don't understand. That's a shallow way of dealing. It's not scapegoat. No, it has nothing to do with that, as a matter of fact. It really is a direct intent to destroy the Jew, and it has nothing to do with it. That's a cover-up. That's a cover-up. That's not what it is. Not scapegoat. Okay.
That's what it's universal man. That's what it's universal man. Like a saying that man is great. Nothing to anybody. Like universal man. There's nothing with man. Not specific group. Not specific group. It's not. There are a slug of dozen on the contrary. They don't have any competition. The Amora thrives on competition. And he's superior to others. That's his whole essence. That's it. Okay? Now, they don't want to keep it. That's why it's Kyoto case called Milchama L'Hashem B'Amalek Midor Dor. Because it means to say that Amalek is the opposite ideology. See, other Rishayim is not Milchama Midor Dor, because it never reaches the level, the high level. It never reaches cerebral level. It never becomes involved in mind. So the other Rishayim that are not involved in mind, it's not a Milchama Midor Dor. I mean, they fail. But Amalek is Mochama Kyoto case car. It reaches up to the Kisei HaKavod. What does it mean? It means because of the fact that it uses Chachma, it uses the intellect, it uses universals to describe the Rishis. The Rishis is framed in universals. You see? Where do you see, by the way, that Haman was a man that used universals? It would be to describe the Rishis. The Rishis is framed in universals. You see? Where do you see, by the way, that Haman was a man that used universals? In the beginning of the movie. Vayama Mumochan. He thought universally. Because it wasn't just lo ala melech levado of sovashti amalka. El al kodesh, this is a universal. So immediately implemented another counter universal. You see, it was a person that thought in universal terms. He thought in universal terms. And if you ever read Mein Kampf, Hitler's book, Yimach Shemo, you read his book, you'll see that he thinks in universal terms. Universal terms. That's the ultimate Russia. It represents the ultimate Russia. Yes? Not true. And in the time of Achashverosh, also the Jews weren't. They know exactly. Take a look at Stryker. Look at Stryker's book. If you can read another, look at Stryker's book. It has nothing to. You see, they hate. Let me put it this way. The Jew is not just the ultimate Jew, of course, is the ultimate of the ideology, but there are offshoots of the ideology. There are offshoots. In other words, you see, for instance, there were great thinkers in the last century, Jewish thinkers, Einstein, Freud, great minds, great kept. Now, where did these people learn how to think from? They weren't. Their parents weren't Talmidei Chachamim, but the approach, the whole approach to thought, to Chochma, was an offshoot of the whole system of Yadus. It was like a byproduct. They're byproducts of Yadus, too. They're byproducts as well. Not just the whole approach, like, for instance, Bertrand Russell used to say when he went to a meeting, he saw all the aquiline noses in the meetings of mathematicians. So he said, there's something in these people that brings them to mathematics, to Chochma. These people weren't involved in Torah. But it's a byproduct of Torah. It's an offshoot of Torah. That at least they're tied to Chachma, something. They're not stam in the Veltar and stam behemoths. You see? They're high level people. So they're byproducts. The Russia senses the byproduct. And of course, with a sensor, as he goes all the way back, he knows where it comes from. That's key. Get the same thing with Haman. Same thing with Haman. He senses something over here. But then he finds it's really the Chachamim that are really it. He traces it back. Intuitively, he traces it back. The Russia has a good intuition. And he traces it back to its source. And ultimately, the hatred is against the Talmud Chacham and against the Torah and against God. That's what it is. Yes?
Hitler in Mein Kampf speaks about his hatred.
Yeah, the Russia knows where it's at. He knows where it's at. He knows where the... Where it's
right.
It's not... They're not ignorant. They sense... Doesn't matter where they are, they know... In their mind, in the back of their mind, they know where it is. Where the hatred is directed towards. It's directed towards the real Jew. That is the source of hatred. Yes? There are, and that has to do with the question that Richard raised also. See, the question that Richard raised also, there's two, really, what, we asked the question before. So first it says, Madur Torah Ves Mitzvah Melech. So then it says, כי יגיד להם אשר יהודי, אשר יהודי. ויהיה הומן קיים מרדכי פרימה שטחה ולא, וימור לי הומן חמא, right? Then again later, two prokem later, when he was invited to the Mishnah, ויצא הומן ביום ושמחו תווי. The Kharos Haman is Mordechai Mishar Melech Lokom Velo Zon Minu. You notice over here it doesn't say Ve'en a Korea Lo. It says Lokom Velo Zor. Which one was worse, by the way? Zor is worse. Kom is one thing, but Zor is worse. It means he didn't start, he was not affected. It says Ve'yimolei Haman al Mordechai Chemo. You know what's the interesting thing? Before it says Ve'yimolei Haman Chemo. Here it says Ve'yimolei Haman al Mordechai Chemo. Why does it say al Mordechai Chemo? What is it chart? The answer is that there are two hatreds that Amalek has towards the Jew. One hatred that Amalek has towards the Jew is the ideological hatred. That is the hatred of the ideology that the Jew represents and the fact that the Jew is an embodiment of the philosophy of Yadus. That's one hatred. Great hatred. That's the hatred that causes him to want to destroy the Jew from the face of the earth. But the second hatred is a hatred not just against the ideology of the Jew, but against the character of the Jew. See, what upset him so much the second time? He already passed the decree, and everybody knew the Jews were going to be destroyed. So you'd think at that point that you'd see some kind of a difference in Mordechai. After all, he knows he hasn't got long to live, and you'd think that some effect. But when he saw he saw he remains unaffected, that when he walks by, it's as if nobody walked by. Then, vayimole homon al Mordechai chema. It was the character of the Jew that they hate. That he couldn't tell. What was the whole thing? What was the Eitz Gavur? What did the Eitz Gavur? How did that satisfy him? What was the Eitz Gavur? What do you have to kill him tomorrow? Why kill him tomorrow? What does the Eitz Gavur make him? It bothers us, So what's the Eitz Gavur? The answer is, the Eitz Gavur is, that's the last recourse that they have. They want to say, we'll see how ineffective the Jew is when we hang him, when we kill him. Then we'll see how ineffective he is. That's why he was so mech tolei, because he was so happy about that. That's why it's satisfied that egomania against the particular character of the Jew. There's two hatreds that Amalek has, the ideology and the character of the Jew. Because the Jew represents the ultimate in courage. The ultimate in courage is the Jew. Why is the Jew the ultimately courageous person? Because the Jew is the only person in the world that faces reality. And that takes the greatest courage. Okay. Now, in a different way. Now, you see, what was the problem? Now, this is where Esther came in. Because Esther saw what's happening. Esther understood, after Mordechai explained to her, she understood what's going on. And she saw that Haman really, she knew what Haman was, and that Haman is trying to establish a whole new system, a new ideology, with himself as the ideological leader. Okay? He was supposed to be the leader of the movement. So she knew that there must be a person like that. There's got to be a certain amount of friction between him and Ahasuerus. Because basically what he was trying to do was make Ahasuerus should be the political leader. Let him run the government. He's a political leader. But the ideological leader would be who? Would be Haman. That's basically what his move was. He was trying to set himself up as the ideological leader of the nation. That's what he tried to do. And that's what Mordechai warned them. Mordechai was warning them that he's not going to bow down to Haman, he's bowing down to an ideology. He's trying to become an ideological leader. So actually, what he wanted to do was to, he wanted to, his, he had an ingenious plan, and it was a very intelligent plan. The plan was that who really leads people? Not the person that has the power over them. The king doesn't really lead people. What leads people is a person that captures their emotions and really captures the inner heart of the people. The ideological leader is the most powerful force. Not the economic leader. So he was going to leave Ahasuerus, let him be the economic leader. But I am going to be the ideological leader of the people. That would give him the most power. The most power. That was his idea. Now Esther knew that Ahasuerus was no dummy, and Ahasuerus, when it came to himself, he was very smart, very clever when it came to himself. And she knew that he knew what's going on and that there's some kind of a friction here. So that's why she made this first party where she didn't disclose exactly what she wants to do. She got his imagination going, and then he started, he had a dream, Haman's trying to kill him, Haman's running off to the queen. He sensed already what Haman is. One person can read another person's feelings, their unconscious feelings. And he sensed already what Haman's objective was, you see. That's why that night, when he started to think there's something happening, a conspiracy. So he said, a conspiracy, and nobody tells me? So what's happening? I must be doing something wrong. So he opened up the safe as a chronos, and he said, let's see. In order for a king to have loyalty, to deserve loyalty, he has to reward those people who are loyal to him. So he said that, just a minute, Mordechai did something, I'm not rewarding him. So people are learning from this. It doesn't pay to be loyal to the king. He saved his life and he got nothing. So that's why when Haman came in, and by the way, Haman was under the influence of a powerful emotion. The emotion at that moment was to destroy Mordechai because of the fact that he couldn't tolerate his character. And he came in that night. He came in very late. It was crazy. What is he going on? Hasn't there another Shnas HaMelech? But the answer is, the Gemara says, the sin of the Kalkelos is Ashura. It means under the influence of the emotion of the hatred, he lost his whole his balance, his mental balance, his sense of priority. He figured, I'll go there, I'll see, maybe he's awake, maybe I can get in there. So he went there, and meantime Ahasuerus already was going through, thinking, yeah, the fear is against him. So that's why he said, he knew very well. So what did Ahasuerus say to him? He said, Maya kachas alavusha suskashed ibat vasechein to le Mordechai ayehudi. What does he mean, Mordechai ayehudi? He said, you really aren't doing this. You're not trying to destroy the Jews because of loyalty to me. That would be one thing. You want to be loyal, the way you presented it was very nice. But I see that this is becoming a whole part of your ideology. So now what happens? This is the way a person leads people. First, he sets up an ideology, but an ideology in the minds of people who dormant think doesn't have any effect, because people aren't thinkers. You must give them something to do in order to act out the following of the ideology. So Ahasuerus saw that Haman is very clever. What he's doing is he's using the anti-Semitism, he's arming the people in order to have him. He is the ideological head. And not only that, but now he's waging a war, a whole campaign against these people, which places him at the head of the whole army, the whole nation, in terms of their, almost war. So he's acting out. He's giving the people something to do to actually make them a part of this ideology. Because you can't just with ideas alone, people don't move. You have to get them to move to action. So he's moving them to action, and therefore he is becoming actively, not potentially, but actually, he's becoming their leader. And they're going around, they're going to kill people at his command. So Ahasuerus, that was Ahasuerus' nightmare. He saw this person is using his power, his influence, to make himself the head of a whole ideology. And not only that, but this ideology has a campaign and a cause which he's now involved in performing, which makes it an active philosophy, which is dangerous, the most dangerous kind. So therefore, he says, Va'aseichem l'Mordechai ha'Yehudi. What does it mean? He says, if you really just worried about me, that's one thing. That's why I want to destroy the Jews. But over here, he says, you're setting yourself up as an ideology. I want you now to break your ideology. I don't want you to be an ideological leader. And what is the best method to demonstrate that the ideology is broken? Where he has to go in the Rehov here and say that Mordechai the Jew is really the great person that the king rewards. So that was Ahasuerus' remedy for the problem of Haman. What was the remedy? He said to him in simple terms, you want to save my life? That's why I wanted to destroy the Jews, fine. But you're not going to be an ideological leader. And how am I going to break you from that? Very simply. How could you, in front of these people, you're making the anti-Semitism part of your whole ideology, your whole philosophy is anti-Semitism. He says, I'm not going to let you do that. You take Mordechai the Jew, and you're in a contract. Show him respect, show him covered malchus, because he saved my life. The other Jews who want to kill, fine, kill him. But it can only be done for one purpose. Only for me.
not for you. You're not going to gain anything out of the destruction of the Jews. You're not going to gain a position through their destruction. That's what Ahasuerus said.
No.
Of course, he said, "Yesh no am echad mechur the mafar." This is a bad nation. They don't say malachim also. They don't. So fine, we'll destroy them. See, really came into the picture. She placed the final. She brought out the final point. Of Achashverosh, what Achashverosh had already started. See, he raised it. That's why Haman said that's why. That's why they said that he was. That's why Zeresh Ishto in Zera Yudim Hashachilosa Limpol Lafana. That was the nefil. Wasn't just a personal thing that he didn't like. That's at a lower level. Haman was on a higher level. Ishvish, but the downfall was. That his whole position as an ideological leader was broken. That's a Shachilosa Limpol HaFada. That was the doubt. Okay. Now, what did Esther do? Esther added the final point. The last bit of evidence that was necessary to completely incriminate Haman. And where was that? What was that statement that she said? The statement was where she said... So it says, if we were sold as avodim mishpachos, as slaves, as the servants and maidservants, then I would have kept quiet. So it wouldn't be worthy to serve the king. But What did she mean by that? What did she imply by that? She said she brought the final proof that there was no purpose in what he did to defend the king, but it was an ideology. Because why should he destroy them? Why doesn't he make them avodim ushvachos? That would be the wrath like Paro did. That's the regular, normal kind of hatred. That's the hatred of the Rasha. So that's what she said. He is not really doing this for you. If he was doing this for you in line with your kind of hatred, then it'll be about a mishvachos. You could use the people and gain from them. Gain. You'd make you more wealthy. A labor. Tremendous labor force. For nothing. Free. But it's lahashmi lara galabe. It means that this is what he is doing is just to try to set himself up as the ideological leader. And therefore, what he wants to do is really subserviate your position eventually, because you're just the economic head, you're just the political leader, and he will be the philosophical leader of the whole country, and he will have the control over the people, entire control. Lashmid Lara Gulabed is an ideology. That's what he's trying to do. That's when Achashverosh decided that his fate was sealed, except it was sealed with the last thing that sealed it was the mistake that he made was when he fell on the bed. Because that association was, you see, he doesn't have any sense of this being his Malka, and on the contrary, he feels that he can approach her in such a way which breaks down the barrier between him and between her, and that's a gam lichbosh and a Malka in the Vaboyas. When he saw that, that was the final struggle. That was the final psychological. Correct. Yes, correct. That's good. That's very good. That's right. A gam lichbosh shemalti mabayis means that he saw at that moment not just Haman as the ideological leader, but in being totally successful and eventually overthrowing him from his political position and economic position as well. That's correct. That's what he saw. He saw the phantom of that of his ultimate success, and that was what Sulu said. Very good. Very good. That's true. Okay. But by the plane of that. On what plane is the hatred? That's more important. Quantity of hatred, yes. He could Achashverosh hated the Jews more than Haman. On an emotional level, he hated him more. But it's a different plane. What is important is not how much hatred, but how the hatred is expressed, on what level. Is it an intellectual level? Achashverosh wasn't intellectual, never reached intellectual proportions. That's because he was basically a hedonist, whereas Haman was really an egotist. Okay.
Yes. Yes, Esther. And she says, "Oh, it is." He knew who it was.
Right.
Step over there. He couldn't be. That's like a turning point.
Yeah.
He knew really who it was. I mean, why did he go through that step? The question and answer.
Right.
She became sort of like a super ego thing. Defined who it was. He needed that last.
Last
definite. Like he couldn't define it from. He knew who it was. Yeah. He could say that. He could figure it out. He knew who the guy was.
She was keeping quiet for a reason. She wanted to first get his hatred up. Then he would reveal it. It was what the thing was coming.
Asher Osa Haman. Well, how did Chavona move in? He said, "Gami Yitzar Osa Haman the Mordechai Asher Diber Tov Al HaMelech." Oh, maybe they saw Haman. That's what he said. Yes, you see clearly that Haman's not interested in the benefit of the king at all, because he just made this eight for Mordechai that Diber Tov Al HaMelech, who supported the king. So the HaMelech flew all off. That was the thing. It's simple, because the Russia is always tied to the physical, and even though he's ideological, but the thing that affects him most is the personal and the physical. And the personal, the hatred against the character of Mordechai was even greater than the hatred against the ideology at that moment, because the Russia is always affected by the physical characteristics. He's ideological too, but down deep he really believes in the physical, because that's why he has to set up. That's why his ideas are not ideas that a person enjoys in reality. Like a chachamim covers an idea. These ideas are totally tied to the instinctual. The instinctual is the modus operandi of Amalek. The instinctual, it's essentially instinctual, but it uses. In order, in the service of the instincts, it uses the higher elements of man. It uses the higher elements of man in the service of the instincts. But what gets him crazy is the instinctual. On the instinctual plane, that's what gets him crazy. That's why when he saw Mordechai or Kumbalazar unaffected, that got him completely crazy. Because that was hitting the instinctual source.
He's coming right out of the party. He was immediately right after the party.
Yes.
He was totally uplifted.
Right.
And that was a real
sign. Right. He didn't have an ideological hatred with Jew. He realized, on the contrary, that he was in big danger with these other kind of things. And he realized that the Jew was really supporting him, was really saving, really helped him. And not only that, but Mordechai, of course, once he became in the Beis HaMelech, in the Beis HaMelech, he brought in great wealth. He was a great financier, brought in great wealth to Achashverosh. But yes, Melech Achashverosh, Mas, he was able to levy taxes. There was prosperity. It was just like Don Isaac Abarbano and Ferdinand years later in Spain. Same kind of thing. Who made Spain? The Jews made Spain. If they expelled the Jews, the whole country collapsed economically. So Mordechai, they secured Achashverosh by the wealth, by the fact that he's safe, and he realized these things. So his emotion wasn't on an ideological plane, so he can convert. He's basically a big Baltaiva, so he was happy.
Whoever goes.
Yeah, he was happy to get rid of the fears and the nightmares and be very safe. He was better off. So he overcame his hatred. He overcame his hatred. The Russia like that can overcome. Yes, same thing as Paraziosa. Same thing as a big Baltaiva. So he was happy. He was happy to get rid of the fears and the nightmares and be very safe. He was better off. So he overcame his hatred. The Russia like that can overcome. Yes, same thing as Paraziosa. Same thing as Paraziosa. Paraziosa, same thing?
Really?
Okay. No, it was to show. The hedonist wants to show.
No restriction.
No restriction.
But not about ideological reasons at all.
Yeah, he wants to show that ideology is false, because it's against the hedonist.
I think at this point.
Let me show one more thing. Yes, sir. The difference is it still on or still on? Okay. The difference we see Achashverosh also was a Balgaiva. You ask me, say, Achashverosh wasn't a Balgaiva? Of course he was a Balgaiva. You see the fact that what? That he wanted Vashti Amalka to show Laharos as Yafya, and Laharos to show the whole thing was to show how great he was, the whole party. But the answer is, you see, the hedonist ego is simply tied to his hedonistic pleasures. It's not, he's showing how great he is, he has this, he has that. In Haman, it's not an ego tied to an external object. It's an ego attached to himself, to the self. That's the difference. That's the difference.
This is an Ervin and Dollar, the Gemara says, on the, based on a Pasuk in Kehelas. That Pasuk Kehelas says, that Ayelas Ahovim Vialas Fein, so the Pasuk in that Kehelas is our Mishnah. In Mishnah Hey, it says that the. The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, Ayelas Ahovim Vialas Fein, Da Deho Yiravucha, Bechol Eis. Ba'avosa Tish Gesan. They should constantly be involved in its love, which means referring to Talmud Torah, referring to Torah. But the Moshe that it gives is like a female ram, that it's, that Da Deho Yiravucha Bechol Eis. That its breasts should nurture you at all times. So the Gemara says in Erevin that why is Torah like a breast? So the Gemara says, because Loma Mishlu Tivay Torah Kedod, Ma Dod Zeh Kol Zman Shatinov Me Mashmesh Bo Motzei Bo Cholov, Av Tivay Torah Kol Zman Shatam Hoge Bo Motzei Ben Tam. So just like the breast, when the child suckles the mother's breast, so the more it presses, the more it gives out milk, so to Tivay Torah, the more one works the Torah, so the more ideas come. So, you see, in Talmud Torah is something which is really an unpredictable kind of thing. You can't, you never get finished with it. So, I want to add a couple of points to what we said last week, because I was thinking about it, and a couple of more points became clear to me. The two points are psychological points, the last is a philosophical. The first point I want to mention is that it's interesting that Medrash that we were dealing with, The Medrash that says that Lassos Pirzon Ish for Ish, when he made this tremendous party, so it says that his purpose was to act in accordance with the will of Ish for Ish, each man. So Chazal say, what is each man? So they say there were two men that were there that were important. One was Haman and one was Mordechai. And we explain the reason is because they were both. But they were both cerebral individuals. That Haman represented a highly developed, sophisticated personality, and in opposition to him, Mordechai was also a sophisticated personality. The difference, of course, was that Haman's sophistication was a sophistication of his mind, but his mind was in the service of his instincts. And we explained that that's really what a Moloch is. A Moloch is an intellectual personality, but his intellect is in the service of his instinctual emotions, and the main emotion that's behind it is the egotistical. That's a Moloch. That's Nazi Germany, that's Hitler and Nachshon. And in opposition to this, there is the mind in the service of the soul, in the service of the pursuit of knowledge. That's the Jew. That's Mordechai. So that's what the Medrash is doing. It's placing these two personalities in juxtaposition to each other. Both sophisticated people. Both are removed from the baser instincts. Okay? But there's something else in the Medrash that occurred to me after I was thinking about it. Now, what does it mean? This pasuk is saying, really, what does the pasuk say? Pasuk says that his whole method in making this big party, this extravagance, was lasos kitzoni shvayish. So it says the two people, one person was Mordechai, and one person was Haman, which means Achashverosh was impressed with both of them. He was impressed with both of them. He realized that these are not ordinary people. Both of them are not ordinary people. He wasn't into which one's a Russian, which one's a Tzaddik, but he noticed that there's some unusual quality that these two people have. And they're important people insofar as his regime, as far as his malchus, his kingdom is concerned. Now, but the pasuk has to make sense. When Chazal and the Medrash, we have a Medrash, the Medrash has to make sense on all planes. And we have to understand Pshuto Shel Mikra. So, but Lasos Kitzon Ish Vish doesn't seem to mean Mordechai and Haman. Aseska Sanishvish seems to mean that he made the party in a way that everybody's happy, want to satisfy everybody. That's the blame shot of the pasuk. Mm-hmm. So how could Chazal take this pasuk out of its context and say Ish L'Ish means Haman and Mordechai? There were hundreds and hundreds of people at the party. It was a party, an extended party, extended extravagance for months. So what was the Yomim Rabbi Shmona and Masyon? Half a year. So what is the how can you say these two people? An interesting psychological phenomenon, Chazal was saying. Yes? That's right. Because they both represent a sophistication. Correct. But it's they're in juxtaposition. One is evil, and one represents the height of man. Okay. But I'm still, the question still is, how do you interpret the plain shot in the pasuk? An interesting observation. Chazal has to make sense in terms of the plain shot in Shalmikra. So how do you understand? Yes? He looked at them as great people. He saw their unusual qualities. These are unusual. They stood out. Haman and Mordechai stood out in Achashverosh's mind. So these are unusual people. These are people that are important people that I have to deal with. These are the main people. And what does it show you? It shows an interesting thing. It's a psychological thing. It shows you that a person can make a party for hundreds of people and in the back of his mind he really wants to impress one person or two people. That's what it shows. Interesting psychological observation. It means to say that people don't really look into their motivations deeply. But the truth of the matter is, that's the way it is. That the whole party that he made, all these hundreds of people, in the back of his mind, who was he concerned about that they should be impressed? It was these two individuals, Haman and Mordechai. Psychological phenomenon. Okay. I thought I'd mention that. Now, because I don't like to leave the Chazal without a complete interpretation. All right. There's one more thing I want to. Another thing I want to explain on another psychological point is the question that Rabbi Mann raised. The question that Mann raised was, all right, we know how Esther plotted to bring Achashverosh to that situation where he condemned Haman, and Rabbi Mann asked me last week, what does it mean when Esther said there's somebody that wants to destroy me and my nation? So there was someone wants to destroy me and my nation. So what was Achashverosh's response? Okay. So man, listen. What is the significance of this outburst on the part of Achashverosh? So actually, I was thinking about it. When you look into it, it is really a crazy statement. What do you mean? Achashverosh himself was the one. Vayosa melechas tabato me'al yodo vayitno v'homon ben amdoso agogi. And he offered money. Haman offered money. What did Achashverosh say? Hakesef nasuloch v'hom lasas bokatov v'inecha. So he was really the one that was the most evil in terms of the situation, in terms of the effectiveness of the situation of bringing about the destruction of Jews. Achashverosh was the one. He wasn't stupid. He knew he, a short while ago he just was the one that was instrumental, and his hatred for the Jews was greater, as we mentioned last week. Was greater on an emotional plane. His hatred was greater than Haman's. Okay, so what's the answer? Is it absurd or not? What's the answer? Yes.
I just want to say politicians
really cheat. From what we see from the Megillah, of course, you have to understand, like the Ramban says, and it's obvious in the Chumash, that the Torah and the Ksuvim, the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, do not really tell you the entire, exactly every bit of the conversation. They just tell you the main point. And the main idea that went on, the main conversation, they don't tell you every single word in the conversation. Could have been, there's probably much more there. Sure, for sure, there was much more there than the pasuk described. But really, Esther HaMalka used three psychological mechanisms in bringing about the change in Achashverosh. They were all three when Esther. First mechanism she used was, as you mentioned last week, was fantasy. She didn't say what she wanted. She made the first party, and then she allowed him to think overnight. His his imagination was instrumental in changing and bringing about the fears. He couldn't sleep, the fears that he had. So that was the first mechanism that she used. She knew that the imagination, the fantasy, is more powerful than any reality. And she allowed him to fantasize, and that's how she really primed him for the situation. That's one mechanism she used. The second mechanism she used was an important principle. That principle is that indirect suggestion is far, far more effective than direct suggestion. It's an important principle. First wants to use this principle to avail himself of another area. General. Why is that so? Because the fact is that whenever you offer a direct suggestion, there's always a resistance factor on the part of the person that's taking the suggestion. Because a person by nature doesn't like to take a suggestion from somebody else. It's automatically put that. You're listening to me. So that's why it's far more effective to place a suggestion indirectly so that the person himself picks up on it, because then they think it's their own idea. And that's why it's much more effective. Mm-hmm. That was the second method that she used. When did she use that method? When she said, what kind of a statement is that? Why say such a thing? She said, because it was, if we only sold for slaves and maid servants, I would have kept quiet, because it's not worth it. That's not worthwhile enough to disturb the king. Okay? So what did she mean? Over there she wanted to demonstrate that Haman is not really interested in the benefit of the Achashverosh. Because if that was the case, so from an economic standpoint, it would have been better to enslave the Jews. But he was really he was involved in an ideology, which was his own agenda. And he wanted to become an ideological leader, which would take away power eventually from Achashverosh. But she didn't say it openly, because an open suggestion doesn't carry as much efficacy. So therefore, what did she do? She sort of, in her statement, she included it, to allow him to realize that this man, let him pick it up on his own. Let him think of it as his own idea. Then it'll be more effective. That's the second psychological principle that she used. The third one, perhaps the most important one, was that she was able to make her request in a way that Achashverosh would never think that she thinks that he is in any way responsible. Because if he thought for a moment that she actually thought that she considered him to be involved, that would have been the end of it. Then it would have been a total condemnation. So she had to present it in a way that he felt secure that she in no way thinks that he really is responsible. And that was his reaction. He acted completely ignorant. Who is it? Who is it that came up with this idea? I had nothing to do with it. So the third, that was probably the most important psychological principle that she used. That if you're trying to influence a person to do something, you must make sure that you remove from that person any kind of guilt attached to it, any kind of condemnation. Of course, if there's condemnation, then you lost the person. A person that's not perfected, the slightest condemnation, he's gone, because he can't tolerate it. So she presented it skillfully in a way that he never imagined that she thought that she's condemning him. That was the perfect reaction. Who is it that who could it be that did this thing? I had nothing to do with it. It was Haman Haraza. That's it. Yes.
Bring up that the first.
You have to look into the Megillah. See, the three principles that you used in order to bring about the term.